rabbi sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
Ingul Oludamare Jinyami Olorun God Jehovah Allah Amen Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our request will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We asked those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning, on the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We said libation, libation, libation. It is good.
People use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Excuse me, Mr. X. Hi. I've read some of your speeches, and I honestly believe that a lot of what you have to say is true. And I'm a good person in spite of what my ancestors did. And I wanted to ask you, what can a white person like myself, who isn't prejudiced, what can I do to help you and further your cause?
Nothing. My high school was a black ghetto in Roxbury, right here in Boston.
In order for you and me to devise some kind of method or strategy to offset some of the events or a repetition of the events that have taken place here in Los Angeles recently, we have to go to the root. We have to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough. And it is because of our effort toward getting straight to the root that people oftentimes think we are dealing in hate. We are oppressed. We are exploited. We are downtrodden. We are denied not only civil rights, but even human rights. So the only way we're going to get some of this oppression and exploitation away from us or aside from us is come together against a common enemy. Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate, you should ask yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you? And I, for one, as a Muslim, believe that the white man is intelligent enough. If he were made to realize how black people really feel and how fed up we are without that old compromising sweet talk. Stop sweet talking it. Tell him how you feel. Tell him how, what kind of hell you've been catching, and let him know that if he's not ready to clean his house up, if he's not ready to clean his house up, he shouldn't have a house. It should catch on fire and burn down.
Hello, my name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank. and I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is help, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Jumbo, Hotep, and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Welcome this evening to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. And we are here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. We are broadcasting tonight from our studios in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we've had a very wonderful, sunshiny day today, and I hope it's been pleasant from wherever you are. We always appreciate your patronage, and we would not be able to do what we do if it were not for you. So again, thank you so very much for participating and for being here with us tonight. We are going to have a wonderful dialogue with our community panel that we've always done. We are going to be talking tonight about the deconstruction of structural racism and just what that is, first of all, and what is it that we are doing and why is it that that is important and how we will begin to dismantle or hope to offer suggestions for dismantling structural racism. We are here, as I said, every Tuesday evening. We have other programs that are part of this network, the Black Reality Think Tank Network. We have a program that will begin airing on Thursday of this week from 6 to 8 called After 7. And it is a group of millennial women who are coming together to talk about family and community and children and relationships and some of the very topics and very important topics that affect Black families. So we're looking forward to them. This is their maiden voyage on Thursday. Starts again at 6 p.m. Central Time to 8 p.m. So I do suggest that you listen to them and tune in for that. Also, on Saturdays, we have a weekend edition that starts at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is right here, Central Time. And that program is a weekend edition, and it's hosted by two ladies, Leola Williams and LaWanda Chambers. They are psychotherapists, and they are working and looking with the whole idea of trauma and many of the very issues that also affect our community as well as looking at dealing with subjects such as the one that we're going to talk about tonight. And again, this is a think tank, and so in a think tank environment, we try to look at it from different angles, different perspectives. Also, right after their program from 3 to 5, there is another broadcast that comes on at 6 p.m. This is the weekend edition 2. It deals with the whole idea of developmental psychology and the whole look at personality setting and things of that nature. That program is hosted by Mr. Alfonso Watkins, who is a clinical psychologist as well, and he is there to talk about stress and looking at how that affects us and what is necessary to, as my good friend Dr. Bruce Bridges has in his book, Recapturing the African Mind. How do you do that? And so that is our lineup. This is four programs that we have, part of the Black Reality Think Tank. We broadcast on the network called Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. And that network is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network as well. They have wonderful programs also. I'll tell you about a few of them coming at the top of the hour, but I would encourage you to listen to some of those as well. They had a very dynamic program on this past Sunday afternoon. They were talking to the commissioner of the African Union, and they talked about things that our sister country would consider helping and doing for us. And so it was a very dynamic conversation, and I think there's going to be a rebroadcast of it, but that's the kind of thing that we like to do. So anyway, we're going to talk about some of those other programs at the top of the hour, but tonight we have, as I said, a wonderful community panelist that's going to be joining us in this conversation about structural racism, looking at what it is, and why is it that we feel that this might be a solution. Again, as a think tank, only thing we want to do is offer the possibility of solutions. We don't have the answers for everything, and we are not trying to do that. All we want to do is hold discussions. Let's talk about them, and let's make sure that things are done properly. I would like to suggest to our audience, there are two groups that we have. There's one group that we have that's here on the switchboard. For those of you that are on the switchboard, I would like to ask you, if you don't mind muting your microphones, because any sound in the rear can be detected. And when we get to our playback format, sometimes that becomes distracting. So if you don't mind, could you please mute your mics? And those of you who are on the Internet, we have a call-in number. This is a call-in format. The number is area code 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And you can, at that point, call us with your questions or comments at any point in time in this conversation. So those are our two things to do. As always, on the Black Reality Think Tank, we give honor to our ancestors, because we did ask them in the beginning of the program to join us in our libations. And so we also like to highlight, call out the name of our ancestors into the universe. And so today we're going to talk about not necessarily an individual, but a situation that occurred that is very significant and very important part of our history. On Sunday, September the 9th, 1739, the British colony of South Carolina was shaken by an enslaved African uprising that culminated with the death of 60 people, led by an Angolan by the name of Jimmy. A band of 20 enslaved Africans organized a rebellion on the banks of the Stono River. After breaking into the Hutchinson store, the group, now armed with guns, called for their liberty. As they marched, overseers were killed, and reluctant Africans were forced to join the company. The band reached the Edisto River, where white colonists descended upon them, killing most of the rebels. The survivors were sold off to the West Indies. The immediate factors that sparked this uprising remain a little bit in doubt and in question. There was a malaria epidemic in Charlestown, which caused general confusion throughout the Carolinas. It may very well have influenced the timing of the Stono Rebellion. The recent August 1739 passage of the Security Act by the South Carolina Colonial Assembly may have also played a role. The act required that all white men to carry firearms to church on Sunday. Thus, the enslaved leaders of the rebellion knew their best chance for success would be during the time of the church service, when armed white males were away from their plantations. After the Stonewall Rebellion, South Carolina authorities moved to reduce provocations for rebellion. Masters, for example, were penalized for imposing excessive work or brutal punishment of slaves in a school was started so that the enslaved Africans could learn Christian doctrine. In a colony that already had more blacks than whites, the assembly also imposed a prohibitive duty on the importation of new captured Africans from Africa and the West Indies. Authorities also tightened control over the enslaved. The assembly enacted a new law requiring a ratio of one white for every 10 blacks on any plantation, and passing what was called the Negro Act of 1740, which prohibited enslaved people from growing their own food, assembling in groups, earning money that they had worked for rather than their owners, and they could not read under any circumstance or learn to read under any circumstance. That was the Stonewall Rebellion. Okay, very clearly, we continue to do this in our productions. We like to talk about our past and our history. We like to connect it to the present, as always. And so we really, really are thankful for you and for your patience and for your suggestions of what we're going to do. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about structural racism. Structural racism is in which public policies, institutional practices, cultural representation, and other norms work various ways, often which reinforce racial group inequality. It identifies dimensions of our history with culture that have allowed privileges associated with whiteness and disadvantages associated with color to endure and adapt over time. Structural racism is not something that a few people or institutions choose to practice. Instead, it has been a feature of the social, economic, and political systems in which we all exist. Structural racism is deep into the fabric of American life. It is in education. It is in religion. It is in economics. It is in politics. It is in social life. It is in all facets of the American system. And it has structured itself in a way that it is continuous and perpetual. So some of the things that we are seeing today is a part of that. When you go to the movies, you're looking at structural racism. When you listen to the history of music, structural racism. When you go to the park and sit in the park with your kids and those statues are standing all around you, you're looking at structural racism. When you go into City Hall to pay your taxes or to do anything in your business, you look at the statutes that you are passed, structural racism. When you go into universities, libraries, museums, you are looking at structural racism. And so now the question becomes, what needs to be done? Do these structures need to be taken down? Do they need to be destroyed and forgotten? Just exactly what should be done, and what effect would it have if we did do it? Would it remove some of the things that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 weeks? Would it stop police officers from choking and killing black men if you take down the statues and remove other forms of structural racism? And these are some of the questions that we want to ask ourselves tonight and have our panel to talk about in a lot of ways. So one of the things that I think we could look at is some of the stuff that we are now seeing that has happened since the situation that took the various things that have taken place over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And there's an interesting array of them. And I just want to mention a few before opening up and going to our panel. About a couple of weeks ago, I think it was on Monday, I read an article that said that the Merriam-Webster Dictionary has decided to revise the definition of racism. That's something that happened. They said that they wanted to revise it in a way that it illustrates how systemic racism is. So they're changing the meaning of the word racism. And then right after that, the University of Washington removed a dance coach, who had dismissed two black members of the dance troupe because of some racial reasons. But then once they removed him, they brought the dancers back. Right after that, Nike, the shoe company, joined a wave of American companies that have made Juneteenth, which celebrates the end of slavery in America, an official paid holiday to better commemorate and celebrate black history and culture. A couple of Sundays ago, an African-American corporate member who has a very large media company purchased two full-page ads in the centerfold of the Monday Wall Street Journal, costing him, now I understand it cost him well over $1 million because they were the centerfold, which is a lot more money. And then right after that, the New York Times, that was an article that was published, full-page article in the New York Times by an African-American. Excuse me just a second. Okay, by an African-American doing the same thing, writing a letter to white businessmen. So that happened. And then on after that, ABC Television named the franchise's first black man. Okay, I'm sorry again. Named the first African-American to this show called The Bachelor. And the first time that they've had somebody black in that role in 18 years, they said, since the show has been playing. And so by all of this activity, right after the killing of George Floyd set off, widespread protests, and we're even up to this very day seeing the results of some of those. So many African-Americans have been inundated, for instance, with testaments and queries from their white friends. I've had so many people to tell me that their white friends are calling them, asking them, what can they do? And as I indicated, in our opening piece, that and reminded you of the words of Malcolm X when he was asked that by a young white girl at Brown University, or I think it was at Harvard, I believe. I'm sorry, Harvard. And he said to her that there was nothing you could do. And I know since then, I understand that he indicated that he was sorry. He wished he would have said more, but on a first response, he was able to say there was nothing that he felt he could do. But these are things that we are seeing, and we have to asking ourselves, is this going to be the agenda for dismantling structural racism? Are we going to have to go into the corporate boardroom, into the what they call the C-suite, and change? Because that is where a lot of the evidence is, and what Nike did. I think it's commendable what Nike did and some of these other corporations did. But I wonder how many black board members do these folk have? How many people sit on the board of Nike and these other organizations that have done so? Because that is where the real difference is going to be made. And so as we go on, as we begin to look at some of the changes, they talk about police reform. Some of the police departments have began to enforce rules that you can't choke hold anymore and do some of those things. And the question we have to keep asking, is this going to work? Is this just one small step? Because we have to stop having people, kill our children, kill our men. That can't happen anymore. And so are these types of reforms going to do that? Is that going to stop that police officer who has never seen black people as human from doing that again? Those are questions that we'll look at. If that isn't, then what is the answer? Because something has to happen. Do we repatriate back to Africa? Are we prepared to do that? Are we ready to do that? Will everybody be very successful in repatriating? back. I know the Ghanaians and some of the African countries of the West Africa are welcoming African people back, but are they ready to make that kind of move? Do they have the resources to go over there and become independent and help and support the economy and the work of Ghana and Nigeria and those places that are there? How do we see that? What is the process that we do that? And so tonight we want to kind of discuss that a little bit. One of the things that I thought I would do as a way of launching out into our discussion, I want to play a clip that was recorded by a lecturer, that Brother Claude Anderson, who, as you remember, Brother Anderson wrote the book Powernomics. This is a lecture he had about ending racism and what is it that's going to take to end racism. So I want to play that, and then after that's over, it's about a 7-8 minute clip. We then want to open the line and ask ourselves these questions based on the way Dr. Anderson poses this whole problem. So with that, let's take a listen to that, and then we'll just come back and start talking about it.
The first floor is always economics, because racism is economics. Racism has nothing to do with who you like or who you don't like. It has nothing to do with it. Only when they beat up on you now, because they know you don't have any economics. You don't have a basis beneath you. When they drag and shooting black folk, they're not shooting you because you're black. They're shooting you because of your social economic condition. You're powerless. They know the only thing you're going to do, they shoot 20 blacks tomorrow. Only thing you're going to do is go out and march. That's all you're going to do. They know that. You have no power and wealth. You build that business community and you build factories and industries in there. And you produce wealth and money and income. Then you take that wealth and money and income and you use it to benefit and lift your people. And you use it also to take the surplus capital and you go to the second floor in that five-story building. On the second floor in that five-story building, that's politics. That's politics. That's where your politicians are. Quit letting people mislead you about voting. Voting ain't worth a damn if you don't have an economy. I have run political campaigns for presidents, for governors, for attorney generals, for congressional people, for mayors, and city council people. Politics, voting and politics ain't worth a quarter in voting if you don't have an economy. It's money that controls your politics. You take your money on that first floor and the Powernomics concepts that I'm trying to get you all to buy into. You take that money off the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. Don't worry about voting, buy them. Be just like the mafia. Be like the mafia. Just buy them. If you can't, you don't have enough money to buy them, then rent or lease them for a while. You rent and lease him. Then you commission him and say, now, on this second floor, now that I bought you, just like all these, this next election, you can see all this money going into all these candidates, billions and millions of dollars. They're buying those politicians. You buy them on the second floor. And then you tell them on the second floor, now, under the Powernomics principles, I bought your rear-end. You now take your rear-end to the third floor. And on the third floor, that's your court system. I don't care whether it's the Supreme Court or the local superior courts or county courts or city courts or state courts. You buy them. And you tell the power, and you tell them on that second floor in the court system, you start taking care of my people and doing right. The courts control the police department. The third floor is the courts and the police department. The police department would not be killing your people and shoot them down if they knew that you had an economy underneath you. They're going to pull in. How many of you seen police shooting down Jews, for instance, running? How many times they've been shooting down Asians? How many times you see them hurting, shooting down American Indians? They only shoot down black folk. You don't have an economy to dictate to the police department or to the court system. Then once you dictate to them, you take that money off the first floor, you go to the fourth floor. Your fourth floor is your media. You all got to start producing media in these communities and take that money and start going into buying media. You got about 12,000 radio stations in the United States, about 12,000 cable systems in the United States, about 5,000 daily newspapers in the United States, and about 5,000 also, what did I miss? Television stations. You own nothing. Out of 12,000 radio stations, you probably now own about 60 or 70. Out of cable system, you don't own any, not one. television station you used to own one out of 5,000. Daily newspaper, you don't own anything. Not one daily newspaper. How in the world can you communicate? How in the world can you mobilize your people when you don't own the media to get in touch with them and tell them what to do? If you right now try to promote something for black folk, most media will not even carry it. Most white corporations won't even buy tickets or ads to help you do it. If you have a black radio station, you cannot have black media unless you got black businesses, because you need the advertising dollars to keep the business, keep the radio station, the media going. The people say, why can't we own some radio? Because you don't have any businesses to buy the ads. Whites aren't going to buy it. But now, you can get white racists on TV and on the radio. You can get the Rush Limbaughs or the Hannitys or O'Reillys on the Fox Channel. That whole Fox Channel is loaded down with racists. But they get the advertising dollars to stay on air. You know why? Because you give them the money. I don't see any black folk in America renegotiating their relationships. When did you renegotiate your relationship with white corporations? Saying that if I see you supporting the Fox Channel on this negative stuff about black folk, you'll never get another dollar out of the black America. You won't do it. You should be doing it. Y'all should be sending letters every chance you get and calling on the black state, saying any white person on any of the Fox Channel out here saying something that implies or suggests or intimate that black folk are stupid, lazy, and dumb, and criminal, we will shut off every dollar coming into your company. They're not scared of you. They got your money for granted. They know they're going to get your dollar because they know you don't have any businesses to buy from. You don't have any alternative places to go get your gasoline, like in Detroit, Michigan, when the Arabs took over 144 out of 146 gas stations. You don't own and control anything. You're dependent on them. They said, we ain't worried about them black folk. They don't have any choice but to come give us their money. We'll kick their butts and they still got to give us their money. And the same thing is true with politics. The Republican Party don't need you. They know they got you locked in box. They know you're going to belong to the Democratic Party. Democratic Party said, we got you locked in box. We don't need you either. Because you see, my people, your leadership has not got enough intellectual gratuity and internal fortitude and common sense to say, hey, let's not support either one of the parties. Right. Let's create. You all could be the most powerful people in this nation within 1 or 2 years if you did one single thing. If you withdrew publicly from the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and said, we don't need either one of you. We're going to create a black independent party. And in that black independent party, we're going to trick you all because we're not going to run any candidates. I wouldn't run any candidates. I would create me a black independent party. I wouldn't run not one candidate. But I would say this. We're going to vote as a block. You're going to get 43 million black votes. And we will deliver that 43 million black votes to whoever promises most and delivers the most to black folk. We don't care what political party you belong to. You can be, and we don't care whether you're a black person, a white candidate, a pink candidate, a yellow candidate, or just an outright Sambo. We don't care. We will vote for anybody who will deliver and promise the most to black folk. That's the way you play politics. And I guarantee you, from all my years in running campaigns, every politician would knock down anything to get to your door. He said, you know what? If I deliver something to black folk, I can pick up 43 million black votes. Hell, I don't need a lot of people. I don't need it. I'll be there. Even though Hispanics have bypassed you in population, they might have about 43 or 45 million Hispanics in the United States, their turnout rate is only in the 20%. You still got them beat. Hispanics might have picked up the population, but they don't have the voting capacity yet. You can deliver and become a powerful, the most powerful people in this country if you started voting as an independent bloc. They said, we move as a group. We move as a fist rather than fingers. And we'll stay together and we'll take care of each other. We'll buy from each other. We'll support each other. And we'll look after each other. And we'll make our dollars bounce in our community on that first floor. We'll make it circulate 8 to 12 times before it leaves black hands. Hispanic money in America bounces 6 to 7 times in the Hispanic community all over L.A. White money bounces 8 to 12 times. Asian and Arab money bounces 13 to 14 times.
Jewish money bounces 18 times. Right now, black money doesn't bounce once. Because you're committing economic, social economic suicide. You can be the most powerful people if you learn how to organize and play as a team. Now, doing that, now here's, now the last floor, then I did the other part. Last floor is the fifth floor. The fifth floor is education. Don't keep going around telling black folk that our future rests in education. It is not. Education is about as useless as the black vote. It's about as useless and as wasted as a black vote if you don't have what? An economy. You can educate these black kids. They have no place to go and use it. Education is a tool, just like a hammer and a saw. I got all kind of black kids graduating from school every year with all kind of degrees, master's degrees in this, master's degrees in that, and they can't master a damn thing because they ain't no place to go. Whites don't need them in their business and don't want them. So you're educating your kids to get an education and leave your community, go to somebody else's community, look for somebody else's business, work in somebody else's job, producing the wealth, power, resources. What's the difference between that and a slave? You're still in the same spot. You should be saying, go off and get an education and come back home to our community and build things for us. And rather than going out looking for jobs, make your organizations, both whether religious or civil, make your politicians teach black folk how to produce jobs, not look for jobs. And we're doing that now by going to the last point, is that's called exceptionality. We do that by telling everybody, tell all your politicians from this day forward, we heard Dr. Anderson speak. And what he says from now on is that we're not going to play the game anymore. We're going to stop doing what we've been doing in terms of inappropriate behavior. We're not against anybody. I don't want you all to hate anybody. I don't want you all to be against Hispanics, Arabs, Asians, midgets, humpbacks, anybody else. Just strictly be for your own people.
Okay, that was Brother Claude Anderson. For those of you who are listening via the internet, you can call with your questions or remarks. Area code 215-490-9832. And I repeat, 215-490-9832. Good afternoon, Brother White. How are you doing tonight? I mean, you know, I always come to you. I can always count on you. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, Dr. Rogers.
Good.
I hope you're doing well and everyone listening to your show.
Thank you. Let me ask you something, Brother White. Is the economic interpretation an excellent starting point for dismantling structural racism? From your perspective?
I would hate to disagree with Claude Anderson, a brilliant man as he is. But from my perspective, his analysis is what we're doing is trying to solve the problems that racism brought about using the European system.
Okay.
We're acting within their system to use their system to get what we want. And we're never going to do that because we're not Europeans. It's not going to work for us.
Right.
It's not going to work for us. We're looking for, first of all, the economics. We've had economics. We've had economics in places like Greenwood and Rose there and the Garvey movement. We've had economics, and what happened to it?
Okay.
Militarily, they destroyed it. It's not just a matter of us not working hard, not knowing what to do. We've always known what to do. The problem is these psychopathic people that we're dealing with. And like I said before, in this country, anything that you do, you have to have a license to do it.
Right.
And them licenses come from white people. They control those licenses. When they tried to draft Muhammad Ali and he refused to go to the draft, although he wasn't convicted of anything, the first thing they did was took away his boxing license. He couldn't make any money. He couldn't survive. It took away his license. You have a radio station. They can take away you have to have a license to have a radio station.
Right.
in the 50 when Billie Holiday made Strange Fruit. They took away her cabaret license. So to do any of the things that he talked about doing, as far as economics is concerned, you're going to have a licenses to do it. The reason we don't have stores and businesses in our communities, and the Arabs do and the Chinese do, is because they make it difficult or nearly impossible for us to get licenses. You apply for a license? Oh, you had a ticket that you didn't pay for in 1960.
Right.
You was arrested for jaywalking in 1979. And you got this on your record. You can't get this license. We can't approve your license. So all of these kind of things, it's not that we don't know how to run businesses. Brother Bruce had a business and doing everything he should have been doing.
Right.
But they came for him. He didn't lose his license because he was lazy and he didn't know how to run a business.
Okay.
So, like Amos Wilson said, they do this because they can. There's a power differential.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Dr. Bridges, it appears that what Brother White is saying is it would be very difficult to build a nation within a nation. That's kind of a whole poor political science concept of being able to do that. I know they had for years back during the 60s, 70s, there was a theory about being an internal colony. And that's what kind of we're looking at, seeing some of those. And I don't know where in the world there has been a successful system like that. What is your point on this economics as a means of dismantling structural racism?
My point is that in terms of what we as African people must do is what Claude Anderson said needs to be put into place, but just that and that alone will not do it. I think that we're fighting an enemy that if we're going to combat that enemy, we have to fight him on the economic level, we have to fight him on the political level, we have to fight him on the level of education, the level socioeconomic level, economic and socioeconomic, and we also have to fight him in terms of having some way to protect what it is that we get out of trying to follow the rules that Herbie was talking about and getting things economically. We have to have a way to protect that, and I think Herbie made a good point. And what Dr. Anson says, is, and I know him quite well. I had him at my store many years ago. He's definitely making some good points. But at the same time, like Garvey said, or some other people said, if you establish this and go through the economic system and do everything that Claude Anson said, because of the psychopathic racist that we're dealing with, if you have no way to protect that which you have acquired by going through the system and doing what Anson said on the first floor, second floor, and by buying off politicians and by using your money, it comes a point to where it's not even the money. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the argument that was put forth many years ago. Was slavery a condition that was based upon the color of the skin of the African, or was slavery a result of an economic system?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it, you see that you have a system of servitude in America. I'm talking about slavery now, a system of servitude in America. But at the same time, that person is responsible for your economic stability and for building this whole country as we have done. But at the same time, this racist that we're dealing with in this system hates the people who are building the system.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means that We can do everything that Claude Anderson is talking about, and we can do everything that is to be done on the plantation and build a system as we have been doing. But white folks still hate us to the point that they don't want us to have it, no matter whether we have the license or not. They come up with something else. As Herbie said, they took Muhammad Ali's license, and on a smaller scale, and not really a license, but you remember when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was dominating basketball, they even outlawed dunking.
Right, right.
You see, they even changed the rules and regulations for the location of the mound on the baseball field when Satchel Paige was pitching. And these are historic facts. So even though if we control the politicians and control the means of production and control the resources and all the economic things, still there's a tinge of racism in white people, I believe, mm-hmm. that no matter what we do, look a good example, and Herbie mentioned this one too. Look at Tulsa, Oklahoma, which came up this week when Trump was out there. Look at Tulsa, 1921. All the businesses in Tulsa, Oklahoma. African people flying airplanes from the streets of Greenwood, Archer, and Pine over into Africa and other places and doing business with Africa, flying planes and then building an economy in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Doing everything that was supposed to be done, following all the rules and regulations, had traveled from Arkansas and from Louisiana and the Trail of Tears from the South through the so-called five so-called civilized tribes, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Coromantee, the Creek Indian tribe, traveling to Oklahoma during the time of the oil boom to take advantage of that, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
But then once we get it and follow all the rules, no army to protect it.
Right.
Look at the Wilmington race riots of 1898, which leads me into another discussion in terms of these statues. You know, in Raleigh, North Carolina, the people of Raleigh pulled down the statue of Stephen Douglas, I think his name was, who was the editor and owner of the News Observer, for sparking or igniting the racial riot in Wilmington in 1898 that destroyed a whole community of independent African men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But they were not, they did not protect it. So, and this is the way I see it. So we have to strike the enemy from all angles. It reminds me of the Buddhist philosophy, in that the Buddha, well, I get to that later. I'm going to hold it to the end. But what you have is you have people on the street. You have some who are marching. You have some who are throwing rocks, some doing this, some doing what. I think we have to hit this enemy from every aspect and from every angle that we can hit him from to destroy him. But
right.
We cannot just put it totally on economics to answer your question, because
or any of those things, right? Yeah, like you said, like he said, totally. You can't do it on just education alone.
You cannot. You definitely can't do it in education. He said that. He said, educate. You're still a slave, as Claude Anson said. So just education won't do it. We have to have people, and this is what I always used to tell my classes when I was teaching Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass always said, power concedes nothing without a demand.
Right.
It never has, and it never will.
Mm-hmm.
Those who profess freedom and yet deprecate agitation are like men who want the crops but don't want to plow the fields.
Right.
Like men who want the rain but don't want the thunder and the lightning. Like men who want the roar of the ocean but don't want the many waters that accompany that roar.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so you have to always agitate, agitate, agitate. And as you said, that agitation can come, as Claude Anson said, in the form of economics. That agitation has to come from you and me. If our position in the struggle in the revolution is in the classroom, we have to agitate and get rid of those lies and falsehoods in the textbooks and in the curriculum. We have to get rid of that. So we're fighting not on a physical level, but we're fighting on another level to destroy racism. The people who are into economics, they're on another level. The preachers in the church, they're on the religious level. They have to do it in the church. So And so we have to strike the enemy, I believe, at all points. And when you study military history, you'll find, even when you study Vietnam, study the Vietnamese and Ho Chi Minh and Vietnamese, you have to strike at every point. And everybody does not have to strike at the same place. You may have one place in the struggle that you work better at, well, that's what you do. I have another place that I should work, then that's what I do. And then brothers, like when we heard Mikasa on the radio the other week on the other Brother Ellis program, you find that Mikasa, he was a foot soldier. He was on the streets. He was an agitator.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned that when you see the movie Blood Don't Sign My Name about Ben Chavis and what happened in Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
The brother from North Carolina, can't call his name right now, but brother from North Carolina, he kept saying, well, I'm a stoker,
mm-hmm.
like a stoker in a fireplace to get the fire going. So you have to have a stoker, but then you got to have somebody to take care of business when the stoker is not around. So to answer the question very briefly, we as a people, I believe, have to fight the enemy on all levels. And just to say, as Claude was saying, economics, and as Herbie said, I agree with him, just that will not do it. And we found that out because we've tried that. We tried to vote.
Okay.
Like, for example, I didn't like some of the statements that Sister Keisha Lance Bottoms made, Major Lance's daughter, singer's daughter, down in Atlanta. I didn't like some of the statements she made when the people were in the street. Okay, I didn't agree with that, but I do know that because of her position, she did get the policeman fired immediately, and the sheriff, I mean, the police chief woman, she also resigned. And then, of course, now the prosecution has to come in, of course, I know, and take it, you know, another step. I know that's not the end of it. But my point is, you have to strike the enemy at every point right. necessary until he is defeated.
And all right, let me ask you a question, Brother Dr. Bridges, and then we'll go to another caller.
please.
Okay, where anywhere in history of our people outside of Africa has that happened? And if so, obviously give us the detail. If not, why hasn't it happened? Why haven't we thought of this idea, or someone else thought of this idea before that?
I'm already on there. It keeps telling me to unmute myself.
Dr. Bridges?
Okay, all right. I was just trying to hear you through the other stuff. Okay, let me think about that for a minute. Where has it happened in our history? And I'm trying to think if I have... No, and I'm not saying it hadn't happened, but just off the top of my head, not having given it much thought, but nowhere can I think of right now where it has actually happened, where we strike the enemy at all points, and that's what needs to be happening, needs to happen.
And why do you think that? Why do you think it hasn't done? What is, because you did the work, you did a marvelous work on recapturing the African mind. So
right.
if we're going to recapture it, why hasn't it done that? Yeah, we've been in this country 400 years. So what's the deal?
I think that's one thing, and that's one thing we really have not done since you mentioned my book, Recapturing the African Mind. That's one thing we have not done. We have not recaptured the minds of our people and pulled our minds and separated our minds and isolated our minds from being connected to white America. And when I say connected, some of us, right. we disconnect to it, and all of us, myself included, we all disconnect to a certain point. Some of us may disconnect and may say that, okay, we're going to do this or do that, but there's certain things that we're so connected, in other words,
right.
Until we, I think, cut the umbilical cord and realize, for example, let's say for example, the holidays of white America. There are many people who are very black-oriented. I got an email today. Many people, not from the Black Ratchet Think Tank, but I got an email today from the Motherland Group in Atlanta, Georgia, and they were talking about holidays. They celebrating different holidays. What I'm saying is, we have to first of all get our minds away from white America as much as possible.
Right.
Cut the umbilical cord, begin to think for ourselves, and begin to define ourselves, and recognize when we see something that's not for us, then we leave it alone.
And that's that structural piece. That's that structural system.
Exactly.
It's going
to
be hard to
cut ourselves away from that system, and that's very difficult because in slavery we learned it so much in order to survive. You gave a good example yourself when you were talking about this whole idea of color. I was listening to a program the other day, and they were talking about this lady was in Egypt, and she was talking about how in Egypt, just about every show she saw on the television in Egypt, that it was very negative towards Egyptians with darker skin. And she said that in Egypt, one out of three of the films that were shown on Egyptian television show African Americans or Africans with black face in a very negative and ugly manner. Mm-hmm. One out mm-hmm. of every three films in Egypt.
And they're doing it now. They're still doing it.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I have it in my hand now. I don't know why it got so close to me because I don't use it. I use it as a soup, as a, something to show people. I have a tube of toothpaste that they use in Japan and China. And it's got black people on the front tube of toothpaste showing our teeth,
yeah.
and it shows us in a negative light.
Right,
as opposed
right.
To, right. You know, so until all this is cut and we get our minds straight and we can resist all this, it's going to be very difficult.
So basically, taking Aunt Jemima off of the pancake box is not going to do it by itself, is it? Because, you know, they're getting ready to take Aunt Jemima off the pancake box.
Get rid of the image now is definitely a start by getting rid of the image. It's
right.
Definitely a start, no
okay.
question. But it's definitely not going to do it by itself. Until that mind
yep.
is cleared of the right, then that's what has to happen.
Good. Now, you had a couple of people that you were inviting that, you know, with the exchanges that you want to talk about. You want to call out one or two of them because they might be online, and I just, you know, rather than go through anything.
You know, and I'm glad you said that too, because I have a brother. I think he's on. If he's on, he's been to Africa maybe countless times, 7, 8, 10, 15 times, and he's doing some work in Nigeria right now with the oil situation among the Ogoni people in Nigeria.
Okay.
And I'd like for him to maybe come on and talk about some of that structural racism that you actually see on the African continent, because when the colonizers left, he really left his mind there in Africa, which goes
right.
back to my original premise. And
What's his exchange?
His number is 910-305 if he's on.
His
name is Alfred Dixon.
No, he's not on.
Okay, he said he's listening. Now he's not on. Okay. But anyway, I wanted him to talk about because I remember when I was in Nigeria, just about every business that I saw was named after something in the Bible. Job's Plumbing Service, St. Mark's Heating and Air Conditioning.
Okay, yeah, I know. Right. And those of you who are online, if you'd like to call and make a comment, the area code is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You can give us a call and we'd be more than glad to entertain. Anybody else that you had? Anybody else had, Brother Bridges?
Yeah, let's see. Who else did I have on there talking about these? What about my 704 number, 704-605?
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about
that's
that.
On that's on there. Good afternoon, my brother. 704-605 in the messages.
Good afternoon. I appreciate being able to listen to some good information that is sort of, and I'm just it's amazed how, you know, we all think alike when it comes to how we are programmed by the white man, you know, for years.
Right.
And it's really destroyed us. But basically I wanted to say is that when we talk about, I'm going to bring up one instance of something happened a couple of days ago with this black driver, NASCAR driver, but people tend to forget that years ago, one of the first black drivers in NASCAR was Wendell Scott.
Right.
And, you know, this guy didn't have no sponsors. They get white guys did everything they could to try to keep him from racing. You know, he had to spend his own money day and night building his motor, making sure that he can compete with him, and he can't compete with him. So, you know, he faced a lot of racial tension from years ago. So that's important. But NASCAR is trying to do better. You know, I'm not going to give them a lot of credit, but they are trying to do better because they have a lot of minority programs trying to get the younger minority guys involved in racing, you know, as far as racing or being on a pit crew. You know, it's good money in it. You know, these tire changes make close to $25,000 a month just changing tires for NASCAR. You know, as I know a couple of brothers that does it.
Wow.
So, you know, they're trying, but, you know, it's just still it's we got a long way to go. But, you know, we have to understand that, you know, we as black folks have to, Dr. Bridges said, that, you know, we have to sort of back ourselves away from the white man. We don't even listen to nothing he's saying because we know that he's a born liar.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. All right. That's great because you're right. And I think that as we try to answer the question on, what are the alternatives for us to do, we have to go back and look at the historical perspective. And as Malcolm X said in that piece that I played in the beginning of the program, you got to go back to the root and begin to look at how to dismantle this. You can't dismantle it from the top of the tree. You got to just go down into the roots of that tree. And began to tear those roots apart. And that is the hardest. You know, just like any of you who are in gardening and planting, it's very hard to disroot something because those roots grow. They get tight over the years. They tangle with other roots, and it's very difficult to get them out. Let me go here. Just for our listeners who have just joined us, we're talking about structural racism. We're just doing an open panel discussion, kind of community panel. If you would like to chart in, you can do so. For those of you who are on the internet, 215-490-9832. You can call us with your questions. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get more into this dialogue. We played Brother Claude Anderson, who gave us a very good economic interpretation of this. A lot of our ancestors have chided at this idea and have offered suggestions. Du Bois, Garvey, Booker T, and even to the point of building an independent nation, such in the case of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as well as Marcus Garvey, the whole idea of just building a nation, and in many cases, just leave from here. There was a lot of colonization movements organized by Africans to go back to Africa, Liberia. There was even a couple of efforts to go back to Haiti. To move forward to go to Haiti. And that was, and actually who stopped them is the Europeans. The whites stopped. They didn't want that. You're taking their labor force out of here. You can't, where you going? Y'all come back here. And they put a lot of effort into doing that. But we've got to, as you know, we've got to get serious. And see, what I'm seeing right now, and I want you to tell me as listeners if I'm wrong, what I'm seeing right now is the effort for liberation is being spearheaded by Europeans, the very same people that put us there. They're the ones that are behind a lot of this stuff that they're doing and the decisions that these corporations are making and making sure that they put them in the paper to let you know that Nike is doing this now. They're not going to do this no more. ABC is doing this, and this company is doing that. And, you know, we want to help you, so can we please tell us how we can help you? You know, That's not it, brothers and sisters. That's not it. Sister Yan, what you think?
Greetings, my brothers and sisters.
Good afternoon.
How's everybody?
Great.
Okay, so I love what I've heard in terms of it being truth. You know, our three brothers just really put it down. So did you, Dr. Rogers, as usual. And really, there's just not a whole lot more that needs to be said. You know,
yeah,
bottom
you're right.
line.
You're right.
Yeah. The brothers put it down already. But, you know, of course I'm going to say something. Bottom line is that as I was listening, I'm thinking all of the things that we have done. You know, Black Wall Street and the over 100 black towns and the Nation of Islam and the Black Nationalist Movement, building a nation within a nation.
Mm-hmm.
We've done everything.
Mm-hmm. Sure have.
And none of it has gotten us out of this situation. And so that really has to be considered. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that we can do that's new? I see nothing that's new. As far as Dr. Anderson, I see nothing new that we can do that would be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are, as Brother said it in the very beginning, we're dealing with psychopaths.
Yes.
And the masses, I think we really don't understand that. And that needs to be understood. And by the way, I do want to say, I might be jumping around a little bit, but this show right here, this needs to be heard by all the people that are in the movement. because we really are ignorant about our history, the stuff that we're talking about. People think that, you know, certain things are going to, you know, we're going to succeed with white corporate, you know, so-called powers. I mean, we're just really, we don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get it because we're not knowledgeable of things that are being said now. So these, I just, if I could find a way to get everybody to hear this show, like, listen to the truth. This is the truth for our condition.
We got you.
Yeah. And so take it with, like I said the last time I spoke, let's get rid of hope. Let's get a vote. Get rid of voting. They have not helped us after all of this time. But, you know, I do want to make this point. Dr. Anderson and his economic, you know, talk, I've heard that many times. I've listened to him. You know, he's a wonderful brother.
Right.
But the fact is that the brother went to Detroit with, I think it was 9 black millionaires, business persons. And the very thing that he's speaking about, he made an attempt to do it. What did this political system that he's talking about, how we need to, you know, control politics, what did political system do? They said no.
Right.
You cannot build a black business district in Detroit. So the very thing that he's talking about, it, he attempted to do it some years ago, and they turned him away.
That's what Brother White said.
And, of course, they used black faces to do that.
That's what Brother White was saying.
Yeah, yeah. So everybody knows, you know, I'm sure everybody that's listening knows that, you know, Dr. Anderson went to Detroit for the purposes of establishing a black business district. And when they told him no, he said, well, you got a Chinatown and, you know, Arab town, the way he usually talks. They said so. You know, so and here where I am, an Asian guy, and I've talked about this before, but this is just, you know, in contrast to what happened with Dr. Rogers, an Asian guy came to North Carolina. He said, I'm going to build a mall for Asian businesses. He was very clear, just like Dr. Anderson was very clear. I'm going to build a mall for Asian businesses. And he got a lot of flack for it, but he didn't care. And he knew he was going to be successful because he knew that his people had unity. And they were like-minded, and they were going to buy from each other. Not buying from each other was not an option.
Right.
And so the man has a successful mall right now as we speak with hundreds of businesses in this mall. Indians, Chinese, Koreans, you name it.
Right,
and
exactly.
And they shop at some of the major supermarkets. When I go to the Asian mall, that's where they shop. So, yeah, I just want to see us wake
good.
Up.
Good. That's great. That's exactly right. And, I mean, those are the things that we have to, the points we got to raise. Let me.
You really do. Hello?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. One quick thing in terms of, you know, what we can do. Since white folk are involved, you know, a lot of whites are beginning to see they're hating capitalism. You know, they're beginning to see the sociopathic, you know, structures that this is how sociopathic the system is. And so we can, at the very least, do what was done in South Africa and start a major divestment movement since this, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, wording is going throughout the globe.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that has to be explored as well, you know, because very clearly that's getting, I think it has become a little delusional that's a working system. But anyway, there's a lot of facts behind the organization, Black Lives Matter, a lot of things that we have to look at as a community. Not saying it's true, you know, because we don't always know, but there's some things that we have to look at, and we have been talking about maybe at some point discussing that. But anyway, thank you so much, Sister Yana. I appreciate that.
Thank you. And don't trust it, y'all. Don't trust none of it.
Okay. I hear you. That's right. And that's what I want to say. Like you said, we got to tell the truth. Dr. Bridges, was there another number that you wanted? Because I wanted to get those folks that you said you had instructed to.
What about a 919-656?
That 919-656. No, didn't you say something about a 704?
Right, that's the one you just got him. That was.
Oh, okay, right. I'm sorry. Yeah, right. Okay.
Right, and the 910-305 never came through, huh?
No, not yet.
Uh-uh. What about 919-599?
599?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Okay, I don't know what. Sometimes people may listen on the computer. I guess
okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes that is the case. Okay, all right.
Excuse me, Dr. Rogers.
Yes, sir, Brother White.
This is Herbie White. Did Nike lower the prices of any of those sneakers?
Say it again.
Did Nike lower the prices of any of those sneakers?
No, I don't think they did. Yeah, that's interesting. You said, did they know? What? Say it one more time. I might have misunderstood you. Say it again.
Did they lower?
Did they lower?
Oh, no. Oh, heck no. No, they didn't. No, they did not. And so in the next couple of months, you're going to hear about black kids lining up at 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning to get the next style of Air Jordans that are going to be coming out.
And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about getting this stuff out of your mind, that you got to have some Nike Air Jordans. That's another right. thing that's been put into our minds. And Dr. Clark talked about it very plainly when he says that the European is the world's greatest user of propaganda.
Right.
He has spread his propaganda around the world and as Claude Anderson said,
right.
the media.
They
control the media.
They control the media. That's right. We don't have any black newspapers hardly anymore. They can't.
And, well, newspapers, period, are just about gone.
Yeah.
But, you're right. We don't have any at all, and almost no radio stations. Are
no radio stations. They're gone. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. So, you know, what has to happen is that whole structure just has to be destroyed. We have to. And, you know, you and I were talking, too, Dr. Rogers, the other day about how when we grew up, at least we recognized and we're trying to get rid of it, how they put on our minds, I'm just talking to a certain segment of the audience now, put on our minds, have gun, we'll travel.
Oh, the cowboys, the westerners. Yeah.
And all these were racist. Chuck Connors was the biggest racist, one of the biggest racists in America, a Republican cracker who's a rifleman, but we're taught to love these. So images.
Taught to love them. That's
the
right.
Right. The images that they put before us and make us to worship, and that's another point I wanted to make, too, when it comes to these statues. In any colony, there's a North African writer by the name of Albert Memmi. He wrote a book called The Colonizer and the Colonized.
Oh, powerful.
And he talked about,
powerful.
Yeah, and he talked about the fact that the colonizer will always, after he takes over the colony, he'll build statues to glorify his heroes.
That's right.
And not only does he look up and respect and honor those heroes, but the colonized people, meaning you and me, we look up and honor and respect his
right.
heroes. We look up and honor and respect George Washington.
Right.
We do the same with Thomas Jefferson, because this is what's drilled into our mind.
Yeah.
So it's a technique of colonialism to make us, they make us love the little white baby in the diaper and the bow and arrow for Valentine's Day. And going back to Claude Anderson again, going back to buy Valentine's Day candy because we think that that's what we should do. So until we get all that madness out of our minds, Doc, it's going to be it's going to be very.
I'm reminded of a situation, and it's just recently has come to light again to the point that it almost shocked me to tears. One of my favorite heroes. As a young kid coming up, like so many of you, I came up in the cowboy Indian era. And one of my heroes at that time was a man named the Lone Ranger. And he used to put on this mask, and, you know, he had a Native American sidekick named Tonto. And I remember when we were kids, we used to go outside and play cowboy, and all the kids wanted to be the Lone Ranger. And I remember that he had this thing, he had a horse, had a white horse, and it was called Silver, and he had
a white horse at that, huh?
Right, a white horse at that, and it had silver bullets. Well, I just found out recently, based on a new book that's come out, that he was actually a part of the Texas Rangers, and the Texas Rangers were the most violent, racist organization, because they were police officers, anywhere in America. They were worse than the Klan. Now, Sigma said, and this is what the author of the book said. He said, they were worse than the Klan. They did stuff in the open, in public. They didn't put on sheets. They didn't have to because they were policemen. and the Texas Rangers wreaked havoc on Native Americans and the African Americans in Texas. And the Lone Ranger, the character of the Lone Ranger, was one of those people. And that's I remembered how I worshipped the Lone Ranger. I even remember my mother one year bought me a horse, you know, one of them horses that's out of a stick. You get, you know, like a broomstick, and you get and ride it, and it was called Silver. I was so happy. I was the happiest kid in the world. I must have been about 7, 8 years old. But that's the kind of subtle racism that exists, and that's what's got to be torn down.
Like, it's
got to be torn down. You got to tell it.
And we can't even build the economic system that Claude was talking about until we get that stuff out of our mind, because the economic system, as Herbie White said, would actually be a replica of the one in this system.
That's
and we
right.
can't use the one. Right.
That's right.
And that's a good idea. And you said you had the broomstick horse.
I had the broomstick. I had the mask. You know, I had the mask on, and I'm the Lone Ranger. High old Silver. Remember that? And they they used opera music. They used the William Tell Overture as the theme song. Remember that part too? And I used to love the William Tell Overture. And it's just it was. But what I'm showing you that is so systemic. It's so structurally wrapped up in there. So it's in the music. It's in the literature. It's in the motion pictures. It's in the comic books. They even had Superman comic. Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger was a guy said worse than a Klansman.
Right.
And this is what we're doing. He was a part of the Texas Rangers. And that's
they were racist down on that southern border. You're right. When you look at the history of the Texas Rangers.
Right.
And so when we grow up admiring all these people and these statues, keeping in context what we're talking about, the statues, then it's hard for us to strike out.
That's
against
right.
the police, because
that's
we're striking out against the Lone Ranger.
Yep.
We're striking out against the Rifleman.
That's right. All of that. All of those. Hopalong Cassidy. All of that stuff.
Yeah. Man, come on.
Yeah.
That's a whole show.
Because, you know, when we were kids coming up, we played those characters. Those characters were white supremacists. And we playing the role of the white supremacists.
That's right.
Yep.
The streets that we live on.
Oh, yeah, exactly. In Wisconsin Avenue, they got a street here in Wisconsin called Teutonia. And, you know, Teutonia comes from that German word Teutons.
The Teutonic people.
The Teutonic people. And the Teutonic was killers.
Oh, killers, bro. Oh, that's a new one on me. I didn't know that. So they have a street.
Yeah, just look up Teutons.
I know the Teutons are, but I didn't know right. They're one of those Germanic tribes.
They were those Germanic nations who were killers. They were killers, cold-blooded killers. And the street, and the street Teutonia is actually in the black neighborhood.
Oh man,
yeah, that's the kind of subtleness that we're talking about. We're talking about structural racism. This is the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 Central Time. We also air on Thursdays from 6 to 8 with a program called After 7. We're on also Saturday on our weekend edition from 3 to 5 with a group of women that are also talking about many of the same things that we're talking about. And we are on 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Here, Central Time, on the Black Reality Think Tank with the a program that focuses on the Elders Council of Milwaukee. Let the Elders Speak, and that program is directed by Brother Alfonso Watkins, who does a wonderful and powerful job of coming from the eyes and perspective of our elders. And so what we have been doing is we've been trying to increase. Also, on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays is a program called Africa Perspectives. It airs from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and that is hosted by Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. Brother Adelabu's company is called Motherland Media. They also sponsor this Tuesday program for us, and he's been doing that now for some time. We really appreciate him. That program, again, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1. 11 to 1. And then on Friday and Sunday, we have Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. They air from 8 to 10 on Friday and 7 to 10 on Sunday. Dynamic program as well. Many wonderful guests talking about some of the very same things we're talking about. We started our conversation off today with a recording from Brother Claude Anderson talking about an economic interpretation of using to dismantle structural racism. Let's take a listen to this perspective, and we'll jump from there. See what you think about this one. This is a little different perspective, but let's see how this fits into the equation.
What hurt us most was when we bought into the socialization process. Let me tell you what that is. Socialization is where you get your ideas, your principles, and your concepts on how to live your life. Okay? What we call integration was white people, so-called white people, primarily Jewish people, who sold us a perspective on life called integration. See, it wasn't just that word. It was perspective on life called integration that said, partner with us white folks and you're going to be all right. Hadn't been in a hostile relationship with white folks so long and had suffered at the end of it, we were looking for relief, so we were willing to partner thinking we were creating a new humanity. But what happened, we were disarmed. In the war, we were disarmed. And so the same people who were asking us to do this was the primary retailers in all black communities across America. The same people who were asking us to do this was the ones who was running the school boards and the schools in our community. The same people who were asking us to do this were the very people who was controlling the music industry. The same people who were asking us to do this was the very people who was controlling the movie industry as it affects us. So these same people were the ones who were the managers of the sports and athletes from the black community. So they're telling us, don't compete with us, integrate with us, but we're running everything. So they're making billions off of us, and we're not making nothing. And what we're saying now, we need to wake up to the reality that it's about ethnicity, okay? You must do for self, as Elijah Muhammad told us. You know, Malcolm said, black nationalism, people say, oh, I don't want to be that. Define black nationalism, Mr. Malcolm X. He said, black nationalism is owning the economics, politics, and culture where you live, being in control of economic politics and culture where you live. That sounds like Chinatown to me. That sounds like Williamsburg, Brooklyn to me. Right. That sounds like Little Italy to me. So why can't be Little Black or Little Africa? You know what I'm saying? If we're going to compete with some people in an economic process, we can't play by rules that's different from the rules that make the game. You can't go on a basketball court with a football in your hand and think you're going to run the 100-yard dash. That ain't going to work. You're going to lose at that basketball game every time. So you got to find out what the rules of the economic game is, and then you have to learn how to play it better than the person that's in the game with you. And what we're learning about economics, at the end of the day, the motivation for economics is the need to provide food, clothing, shelter, safety, and security for ourselves and our family. See, we can talk all this other stuff. Well, I got a degree because I want to go to college. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. Why? You want to make money. Why do you want to make money? Because I've got to buy some food. I got to buy some clothing. I got to afford some shelter, and I want to provide safety for my family. So that's the bottom line. And if that is the bottom line, you got to be in control of that. You can't depend on someone else to deliver that to you. And so what Happy is going to try to show is how to develop black businesses, how to manage black businesses, how to organize black people around the management and the marketing of black economic enterprises where we live, especially in the United States of America, but anywhere in the world we happen to be today, where we control the retail and the wholesale that affects us. If you see the little Arabs in our community, you see all Arabs are working in the stores. The guy that comes with that little box truck to deliver this produce to the stores, they're all Arabs. The little warehouse that the box truck picked up from, which is now at the wholesale end of that retail chain, they're all Arabs. That's the way you do it. The problem with that picture is the consumer that's giving all those Arab guys work so they can make money and go home and take care of their families are all black folks. You see? And at the same time, we're giving all those consumer dollars to this community. Our young men and women are standing on the street because there's no store for them to go and get a job in. There's no retail business in the community that they can work in that they own because other ethnic groups is hiring their own people so that they can provide the food, clothing, shelter, safety, and security for themselves. I'm not anti-anybody. We're not anti-anybody. We just pro-black folks being to feed, clothe, and shelter themselves. And you cannot do this if you're so naive and you're so ignorant, you give the best of your capital away to someone else who's trying to do the same thing for themselves.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, that was Brother James Small. He had a perspective that I want to talk. What do you think, Brother Marcus, in this discussion on dismantling structural racism? I don't know if you, I don't think you were on when you, Brother Claude Anderson was talking about it, but James Smalls, what is your opinion of his statement?
I heard both of the, okay, good. You know, in reference to James Small, he was talking about them Jews. We always want his curses, but he's the Jew. That Jew, he come and side with us and talk about, oh, let's join hands together. But he's way up on the economic ladder. Mm-hmm. So when they move up, he moves up further. Yeah, we sit at the bottom. You see? But economics play a great role into what we're doing now. Economics does play a role because you need money to buy tanks. You need money to buy ammunition. If you have the right money now, you could buy a nuclear bomb. You see what I'm saying?
So right. Okay.
We have to get our economic house in order. You see? Because by taking over our economy, then we can start building. But without money, you can't do anything. We only control 0.02% of the U.S. economy. Not even 1%, brother.
Yes.
You got to go into decimal, 0.02%.
Yes.
So it's imperative that we get our economic house in order because that will help us to stabilize at least, you know, some of our communities. Get that wealth. That CMQ he was talking about, they control Oppenheimer. They control the beers. See? They control the wealth.
That's right.
So give the black people wealth. It will give us power.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother Marcus, as always. Area code 917, New York City, 662. Any points you want to make about this money? You live in the big money city. 917, any comments?
Yeah. Greeting, Dr. Rogers.
Good evening, my brother. How you doing?
Listen, not too bad. Thanks for asking. Yeah, well, your first four speakers, I could have turned the show off and just went to sleep, but they covered it all.
But, okay.
What I wanted to say is, what Claude Anderson says, buying a politician, you can't trust a white man for money. He'll take your money, and when it comes time to deliver, he ain't nowhere to be found, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anything, we have to stay within our own people and work with our own, you know, because white people ain't got... Henry Clark said, powerful people do not allow powerless people to take that power from them or that power with them.
That's true.
So we have to work within ourselves before we can do anything with them. We got to get our own act together.
Right.
Because their whole objective is to keep us where they got us at.
Right.
And the quicker we understand that, the better we are. They can give us holidays, paid holidays, but this and that, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But power's what we need in order for us to survive.
That's right.
And having something and not being able to protect it is like not having it at all.
And we have not been able to do that. We can't even protect our own people, our children.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's all right. Okay. All right. Thank you, my brother. Thank you so much. Area code 404573, Atlanta. 404573. Any comments?
Yeah, it really got me thinking, but I see this whole dilemma that African people here in the diaspora find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. Is a long-term process.
Yes.
It's a long-term process. We're not going to solve our problems in a few years. It's a long-term and it's a process.
I agree.
Now, we have experienced enslavement since before they brought us to this country, and ever since they have brought us to this country. And we have been so-called a free people for just a minimum of 155 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a long time. But even in that period of time, we have made tremendous gains. And we have played the game and bought into, as Dr. Small just said, the idea of they are human like we are.
Right.
And we saw them from the perspective of African eyes. But now that we have experienced them in their own home for over 500 years, we know them better than anybody else on the planet. It's like when you live in a man's house, you know that man.
Right.
Or when you live in a woman's house, you know that woman. So we know them, and we know how they are. My mindset is we don't have to ask them. We don't have to go to them. We don't have to ask them, can we be independent? Can we think independent? Can we act independent? Can we move independent? Can we build independent? I don't hear that coming from you elders.
Right. Right.
And we need to not look to them for our answers any longer.
Good point. They cannot
stop us from organizing. They cannot stop us from having house meetings. They cannot stop us from building wealth and putting it under the slats under our floors like our predecessors did. We did it before. We can do it again. And not only can we need to.
Amen.
We have to. And we must. So it's a long-term process.
Right.
It's a process, and we must attack it, yes, from all angles. But economics, we can do this economic thing. We ain't got to ask them to do it. We ain't got to ask them to educate our own. We ain't got to ask them how to re-socialize ourselves. We don't have to do that anymore. We know who we are now. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. And it has.
Right.
So we can take back our own power, our own autonomy, our own, self-determination. We can do that. And we have made connections with our homeland. I don't hear that coming from us. I don't hear that coming from y'all. We don't have to look to them anymore. We know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And what we can do for them is let them know that we know who you are. Most of them have the story ain't never been told. I'm almost done.
That's good, though.
Most of them don't know their own history. We know it better than they do.
Yeah.
So that's what we can do for them. And they can do something for us, too. But who could they go to? We're so multi-divided, we need organization. We need to just get together and organize, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And we don't have to ask them, can we build New Africa? We got enough black people who got some money, some coins, some dollars.
Okay.
And we got oil and diamonds and gold, and they're waiting, and our children are too. Thank you for this time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Area code 252-230, Wilson, North Carolina. Are you comment or are you just listening? 252-230, are you listening? Got a comment? Just listening? Okay. Thank you so much for listening. Okay. Brother Alfonso, you operate a program. You're hosting one of the programs for us. where you indicate that you're seeing the world through the eyes of our ancestors. Did our ancestors have the eyes where they would buy their children Cinderella dolls? Is that the eyesight we're looking at?
No, thank you.
Yeah, that ain't what our ancestors was looking at. Baba Smalls hit something that I think we need to go back to when he talked about socialization. And I'm going to read the definition of socialization. It refers to a process of assuming responsibility for one's ethnic group based upon its teachings of its shared culture and destiny.
All right.
Part of what we have to begin to understand is that we have been socialized to be Europeans.
Right.
In that socialization, we have acquired a personality configuration, which is the ego. and so from a developmental psychology perspective, there has to be an exorcist done to relieve or remove the European ego out of our spiritual being.
So there
has to be a process. So we have to start talking about what is a theoretical model. What's going to be our theoretical orientation to redeem the African personality?
I like that.
Because I firmly believe you cannot be a capitalist and an African.
Okay.
It's an oxymoron. You can't be what has enslaved you. Mm. And so if you continue to function as a capitalist, that means you always competing, and that means you always for sale. So we have to look at how we are defining ourselves and how we are going to participate in ourselves from an independence perspective. We can't function in capitalism. Capitalism breeds a dysfunctional personality in the descendants of kidnapped and enslaved Africans.
That's powerful.
I'm going to say that again. Capitalism breeds a dysfunctional personality configuration in the descendants of kidnapped and enslaved Africans. It is against our very being to be capitalists.
And that's what that Smalls was talking about, huh?
Yeah. Non-human.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So as we had this conversation, we can't function in any of their systems or any of their structures and think that we're going to be able to benefit ourselves in those structures, because those systems and structures are against our very nature.
That's right.
I like that.
So when we had these conversation families, we have to look outside of the European social construct and define it from an African paradigm.
Okay. I like that.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
That's what I totally agree.
Yeah, our Brother Alfonso does a program on Saturday evening from 6 to 8 here on Time for Awakening Black Reality Think Tank. And those are some of the focuses of his discussion. That's why I wanted him to respond to Brother Smalls' comment. Thank you so much, Brother Alfonso.
Yeah,
Brother Griffin, you had posted something that I really liked. I know you got your mic off, but I really wanted you to comment on that. If you do, if not, if you can't at this time, I understand. But are you available to make a comment on what you wrote a few minutes ago, Brother Griffin? Okay, all right. So I guess he's tied up. Let me go to back to. Dr. Bridges, and let me ask a question. So, Dr. Bridges, let me ask you this now. I will admit you don't have to answer me, because I know, you know, everything we can't talk about on this medium. We can't talk about all that kind of stuff. But is there any discussion possible, you think, to look at alternatives such as the Haitian Revolution and some of the other things that we saw? And again, I know this is not the format to talk about it, so I'm just asking it in a generalized way. How do you see that?
And I'm glad you asked me about the Haitian Revolution too, because that's something I really like talking about. It's a good example of the powerless powerless overthrowing the powerful when the Haitian people destroyed the French and Spanish armies and became the first nation in the Western Hemisphere of independent Africans. So that's a great, great example. But if you notice, one major problem, which goes back again to our mindset, and as the brother just said, Brother Alfonso just said, which goes back to our mindset, until we begin to re-socialize ourselves and to get our minds back, we will not be successful. Look at the Haitian Revolution. After Toussaint Louverture and Bookman and Dessalines and some of the other leaders of the revolution were able to get the country of Haiti back under the control of Africans, they still, even today, they still have to deal with that. And Haitians were, of course, colonized by the French, so I'm going to use this French term, still have to deal with that Haitian white European bourgeoisie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
They had to and that's a problem. It had to deal with the bourgeoisie. And also, not just and contained within that whole idea of the bourgeoisie is the color concept that's very dominant in Haiti. Haiti is on the same island as the Dominican Republic, but the Dominicans think that they're better than the Haitians because they're lighter than the Haitians. And even in Haitian society, the dark-skinned Haitians have to contend with the lighter-skinned Haitians who think that they are better than the darker-skinned Haitians because of what they were taught by the French bourgeoisie.
Right.
And that same idea, those same concepts that Toussaint Louverture and, like you said, the Haitian Revolution is a good example. But even in America, even today, we're still dealing with this whole idea of light skin better than dark skin inferior, light skin superior. Light skin is fast skin. We use the term fast skin for light skin. Ain't nothing fair about it. But I'm just saying, all of this will not be alleviated, will not be eradicated until, as I've said, and the sister from Atlanta said, and some other people have said, Sister Benicia said, until we get our minds back and begin to think for ourselves, we will never be successful. A good example to relate this to what we were talking about from the beginning, when the colonizer left Nigeria, when the colonizer left Ghana, when the colonizer left Kenya in East Africa, when the colonizer left South Africa, they left intact the African police force and army, and that's why when you go to Africa, the police and military are brutal against African people. Very, very, very brutal against their own people, because that's a part of the colonialism that was left intact when the colonizer left. And it worked on behalf of the colonizer. So until we can just destroy, as Brother Alfonso said, his whole system and his way of thinking, his holidays,
right,
his heroes, his heroes, till we can destroy his whole entire lifestyle, we will never be a successful people.
And that's, and like the sister from Atlanta said, that's a process. That's a long process.
And she really didn't need to say that, because we already knew it. It's like the subject of a sentence that's not in the sentence. It's understood that it is a process and it's going to take a long time.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Sister Benicia with this, and I know because you've been in the community educating business for a long time. So basically then, if we're saying it's going to take a long time, it's got to be structured, obviously somewhere we are saying that it's going to have to be done with our children. Our children are going to have to be the ones our young people are going to have to be the ones that will take this battle up and initiate it at the level that they can when they're of age to be in power. Are we preparing them properly now to do that? Are we doing a decent job from your eye point, your viewpoint, to do that?
No, no, and no. because when I talk to young adults, I hear the same thing. We have to figure so-and-so out. We got to figure out how to get our liberation. And I say, no, you don't. Marcus Garvey showed you. Nation of Islam is a present example. And I go down the line of things we talked about. And they all say we were not taught. Not all, most say we were not taught. So, no, we haven't done a good job at passing down strategies and working liberation ideas.
Okay.
So that's something we really have to jump on very quickly. And I say quickly because from what I see as a realist, we don't have a lot of time.
No, we don't.
I really do not believe we have a lot of time. We have to remind ourselves that we are in the midst of a genocide. They are trying to genocide us out. How many, I think so far there have been 6 black men lynched since the guy put his knee on George Floyd's neck.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if there are more, but there have been lynchings. They are reigniting lynchings now, public lynchings. And one of them, the brother, was lynched in front of a government building or something, and they claimed that they didn't have any camera footage. How are you not going to have camera footage in front of a government building?
Yes.
Well, they were caught lying. So, you know, this is again, I always say, you know, those of us that are traumatized, and most of us are on some level, it's very hard for us to look at at reality. That's what trauma does. It prevents you from seeing reality. But the reality is we're being killed off.
That's right.
Mass incarceration, you know, putting people in cages to go crazy, killing us on the streets. We've got to really look at that and teach our young people. You know, these two, you know, each are tall orders.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever we did in the past, we need to go back to it quickly.
Yes,
and capitalism, as you know, was talked about in this, and, you know, being socialized to be, you know, Negropeans, just interrupted so much of our natural African mindset. So, yes, what Bruce, you know, talks about and what we're all saying, we've got to reclaim the African mind because in African culture, the children come first, and we're putting them last.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Bert, clearly it seems to me that we've got to turn our attention to our children. That's one of the priorities that we need to have on our agendas is working with these young people.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And getting them this show, again, because the elders, we have the knowledge to teach them. So get them, you know, we can use our black media to teach our young people.
Yeah, and it seems like that, you know, you know the authority power that operates is encouraging things, you know, like they're accepting this tearing down the statue stuff to devote ourselves away from the real issue, the critical
mm-hmm.
issue, as you said, work with our children. So we tell them to go out in the street and pull statues down instead of the educational part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that to me is a part of that suicide thing that we are doing. We tell our young people to go to on Saturdays, they go play basketball tournaments and get the nails done, the hair done.
Mm-hmm.
Time for us to get there and talk to them and speak to them in a certain way. So you're right. And we can see that. And that's what we have to call out. You know, that's the thing that I think we can do. We can call that out, encourage parents to become more proactive in their children's lives as opposed to reaction, you know.
And Dr. Rogers, and teach them that there are consequences to not doing this.
Right. Exactly.
Not teaching our children, literally turning them against us.
Right.
You saw the signs that said we are not our ancestors, like something was wrong with their ancestors?
Right.
Yeah. So we have to get busy.
Well,
Dr. Rogers,
yes.
Go. This weekend, is that the conversation we're going to be having on the show, is a conversation about what is the purpose and benefit of an African-centered education, curriculum,
beautiful.
Specialization.
Beautiful.
So that's what we're going to be talking about this Saturday from 6 to 8.
Fantastic. Well,
oh,
my brother
announced that.
Yeah, right. Well, my brothers and sisters, it is now 9 o'clock here Central Time, so we have completed. This is obviously an ongoing discussion. I thank all of you so much for your input and the ideas that you have. We now just got to continue to put them in action, and we can make it happen that way. Got to continue the discussion, encouraging, agenda setting. Those are the things that we need to do. Nothing is useless. Each thing in its place is best. So let's just continue to do that. So with that, I'll let the old-time reggae star Toots and the Maytal take us home. Thank you so much, and have a very good week.
I say, peace, family.
Yeah. All right.
The struggle continues. Most heaven.
On the move.
West Jamaica. True is a mountain shining down the river. All my friends there pulling on those reeds. Young and then the mountain blowing like a breeze. From zero.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network.